Welcome to Sizzling Arrow Outdoors, where we're going to cultivate, harvest, and prepare clean organic food. I am Paul Rhodes, the host and founder of this podcast and the company known as Sizzling Arrow Outdoors. Well, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate having you all here. If this is the first time that you have tuned into the Sizzling Arrow podcast, welcome. And you know, after this episode, make sure you go and check out the first episode, the introduction to Sizzling Arrow, and also check out our website, www.sizzlingarrow.com. And that really breaks down what we're all about and what we're looking to accomplish with both the podcast and the company itself. So make sure you do that after this episode. And if you have been listening to us for any amount of time now, thank you for tuning back in. And I know you're going to enjoy this conversation just as much as you've enjoyed the other conversations we've had in the past, and maybe even a little more so. Well, today we've got a very special interview show lined up for you today. I had the opportunity to sit down with Lucinda Cramsey from Moink, and we had a great conversation based around kind of what Moink does and what they stand for. We talked about regenerative agriculture, meat labeling, why it's important to support our local family farms, and why it's in our best interest to support the farmers and purchase our produce and meats from them versus the grocery stores. So we talked about those things and much, much more during our conversation. And if you're not familiar with Moink, they are a meat subscription service based out of Missouri, and they ship fresh, high-quality meat all across the country. They specialize in grass-fed, grass-finished beef, lamb, pasture-raised pork, chicken, and wild-caught salmon, so you can kind of mix and match the boxes to your liking or whatever you feel that you're going to use more frequently. So we're going to go ahead and get into the conversation I had with Lucinda Cramsey from Moink, and I hope you guys enjoy it just as much as I enjoyed having it. So let's go ahead and get into it. Here we go.
Well, hi, Paul. How are you, Bobby?
I'm doing well, Lucinda. How are you?
Every day above ground's a good day.
Yes, ma'am. It sure is. It sure is. Well, how's the week starting out for you? You guys been staying pretty busy?
We're dying. We're dead.
We're dead.
Deceased. but we did not wave the white flag of surrender, so that's good.
That is good. That's the most important thing. You got to keep trucking, right?
Yeah, people are often surprised to learn that my entire executive team, including myself, works a pack line every Tuesday. We ship all of our boxes on one day.
Oh, wow.
No matter your title, no matter what you do, the other 4 days on Tuesdays, you work a pack room. And yeah, we got our butts kicked yesterday, but nonetheless, we'll be awful cocky by Friday and be ready to go again Tuesday. By Tuesday afternoon, we'll once again be humbled.
Yes, how about that? Yes. No, that sounds great. It's good to know how to do everything, you know, within the company and get everyone involved with it. And I mean, that's a good problem to have, is that you guys are running around crazy on Tuesday shipping stuff out. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I won't go down any more rabbit holes about what's happening behind the scenes over here, but what do you got for me, Paul?
All right. Well, really, the first thing that I'd like to know, and just I'm sure my listeners would like to know, is what is Moink? If you could give us kind of a background of what Moink is and just explain it a little bit to us.
Okay. Well, Moink stands for Moo plus Oink. Moink.
Excellent.
And we're a meat box subscription company that connects tender-hearted carnivores with high-quality and humanely raised meats from small family farms. So in other words, people that eat with a heart, you know, you actually care about where your animals came from, your food came from, how they were raised, are our customers. And small family farmers, including myself, are our suppliers. And we just connect the two.
Very nice. Excellent. Well, I mean, we definitely need more of that within the country for sure. And yeah, how did you all come about getting Moink started? Like what kind of made this happen for you?
Well, I'm an eighth generation farmer, born, raised, and still hail from a town of 600 people here in Missouri.
Okay.
And I grew up on a very on a struggling family farm. And it never made sense to me, Paul. It's like water everywhere and nothing to drink. Mm-hmm. When my father died, my mother was left with 1,500 acres, 6 mouths to feed, and a farm she couldn't afford. Now, you tell me why it is that farmers feed America and often can't put food on their own table.
That's a great question.
It's a real problem that farmers face because the system's kind of stacked against the small family farm. We're one of the only professions that we don't set our own retail prices. We don't have a lot of control over the market. In fact, feeder cattle, pork bellies, all of this is traded on the Chicago Board of Trade. You know, JFK once said that a farmer is the only one that buys everything at retail, sells everything at wholesale, and pays freight both ways. And he was pretty spot on. So seeing that growing up, I knew that it was going to be my life mission to help small family farms. And as fate would have it, I moved across the country, you know, I was trying to rise above my raisin and get out of the small town. I ended up setting up organic food hubs across the country, fruits and vegetables. But anyway, all roads lead home, and I come back home and started raising hogs and realized that, you know, there was a need. When I lived in the city, I wouldn't eat a pork chop from the store because to me, it tasted like a confinement building smells, right?
Oh, yeah.
So when I got home and started raising hogs and stuff, I realized, you know, I couldn't have been the only person that had that pork chop problem, trying to find a high quality pork chop that was worth eating. And farmers were still having the same issue they've always been having. So I thought, well, I used to ship produce and got pretty good at it. Why don't we do the same thing with meat? So kind of just set it up on the same way, a subscription. And the reason we do that is because one of the hardest parts of farming in terms of having to market is figuring out consistency and supply chains and planning ahead.
Yeah.
Sorry, I am in farm country. So if you hear a combine driving by, that's what you just heard in the background.
That's completely fine. And all my kids and everything are out of the house, so you're not going to hear a bunch of elephants running through the house. So that's a good thing on my end. But
look, I'm going to tell you, speaking of which, side note, let me go down a little rabbit hole and let you know, I try to do this Zoom meeting. You know, sometimes people want to have interviews with me and they don't realize that I really am a farmer. I really do live in rural America, and getting cell service is sometimes difficult. So that where I could get it to have the Zoom call was up at the top of the hill where the chicken coops were. So there I was right in the middle of the Zoom call, and the door fell off the chicken coop, and out comes all these birds. And I was like, Kenny, and y'all fussing about your kids in the background. How about 1,500 birds just went crazy in the background? Anyway, yeah. So the reason that subscription to us is important is being able to plan ahead and kind of have a general idea. Of course, our customers can skip their orders and do different things, but within reason, we can plan ahead and help farmers the way they need help, which is just to know what's coming down the pipeline, what they should do, give contracts that give an honest wage, etc. So that's kind of how the background of it. And then I guess you could say my claim to fame, or why you're probably talking to me right now, is I was on this silly little reality show called Shark Tank.
Well, you know, Go ahead. So the funny thing is I had no idea you were even on Shark Tank until I was getting ready for the first conversation we had.
Well, I'll rename it. It's no longer called Shark Tank. I'm going to call it the Fight Club because we were fighting. The Fight Club. But anyway, this is kind of the background of Moink. And now, you know, our operations are in a town of 94 people. I think we're going to get above 100 when the census data comes in. We're crossing our fingers. And we ship all our boxes out from here, rural America. We employ 22 people. So by my math, that's roughly a little over 23% of the population works at Moink. So, you know, it's not just that we help farmers. It's not just that we put a high quality product on people's dinner tables, but I always say the right thing tastes good at Moink.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So there you go. There's a little bit of background and about our company and where we come from.
Well, that's amazing. And yeah, that reminded me when you said you had the town is about 95 people. And I grew up in a town of about 120. And I've been out of there for 19 years now. But last time I was back there, I think we only raised 5 people. So it's at 125 now.
Well, at least you're going up.
Yeah, at least we're going up slightly. But I think that's counting the cats and dogs as well. But mm-hmm. it was a great place to grow up. And, you know, we, like yourself, grew up on a pretty large farm or ranch, if you would. And got fresh cows and grass-fed beef and all that. So it's definitely something that is needed more so in the country now, probably more than ever, really.
Yeah. So definitely so.
So I know, you know, reading through your website, you guys were looking to do get the organic certification. Can you tell us a little bit about the organic certification?
Yeah, it's not worth the paper it's written on.
That's a pretty grueling process, isn't it?
Yeah, it's silly. It truly is. There's a lot of stuff that is in there. You know, I was a champion of the organic industry for many years. Mm-hmm. Certified organic. People need to know there's difference in these terms that get thrown around, and they mean different things, right?
Yeah.
So once upon a time, the National Organic Standards Board was run by farmers. And so farmers were the ones that came together and said, okay, we're going to set the standards of this. Yeah. And then what you had happen is you started to get some corporate interests set on that board. And how can you mass produce certified organic products, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that word used to mean something. To me, as somebody that fought long and hard for that identity, for that stamp of approval, to set those guidelines, had a very active hand in that. I'm very disheartened by what that label means. Now, I will tell you that I personally, you know, I still buy organic fruits and vegetables. That's mm-hmm. for sure. But what that term means is kind of convoluted and messy now.
Yeah.
And so the new thing, there's always a new way, right? So corporate interest gets, here's how it works. A bunch of us crazy farmers get together and say, look, we need a way to differentiate what we do and why the small farm is important. Let's put something together and then let's put a label on it so consumers can know.
Mm-hmm.
The consumers want that. They see that. They look for it. And next thing you know, corporate interest come in. You know, this is where you get your GAP certification. You'll hear people say, I'm GAP 5, I'm GAP 4. What does that really mean? Good agricultural practices, there's some things in it. But once again, you know, a label's only as good as a person that's willing to stand behind it.
Very true.
So at Moink, we do something called regenerative agriculture, and all of our farmers use it, which I think is starting to become a bit of a buzzword. I don't know. I'm a Luddite. I don't really like social media. Mm-hmm. I prefer to see people face to face, shake their hands, sit down, have a cup of coffee. And side note, sometimes on social media, I decide I don't like people, but I like them in real life. Yeah. So I want to keep liking them in real life. So I expect I'll just stay away from social media. But I hear that regenerative agriculture is like a trending hashtag, you know, as if that's what we define our reality by. But I want to explain that what that means. And the only way I know to describe it in layman's terms that anybody with no background in agriculture can understand, if you've never been to a farm, doesn't matter. I'm going to explain it to you in a way you can understand. And that's through The Lion King. If you've ever watched The Lion King, and everybody with a child has,
mm-hmm.
At the beginning, we're all singing, it's pretty, circle of life, we're holding up Simba, everything's beautiful. You know, the animals are on the move. Next time you watch it, you'll see them like running. And yes, there's, you know, a food chain there.
Yeah.
But the pride lands are beautiful. Okay. This is regenerative agriculture. Now, what happens when you get big corporate interest involved? Scar. What happened mm-hmm. when Scar took the throne? People were hungry. Bad things happened. There was fires everywhere. There wasn't any green stuff. They overgrazed. Okay.
Yep.
Here at Moink, we're Team Mufasa. Okay. Regenerative agriculture is Team Mufasa. commercialization of agriculture overrunning it is scar on the throne. You know, so that means that we work in tandem with animals. So on my personal farm, you know, it had been row crops so many years before I got a hold of it. The poor land was just sad, if you will. So we planted certain crops to attract butterflies and bees. And then we run chickens over it. And the chickens put the nitrogen back in the soil. And then when you run cattle over it, they push with their hooves. And that aerates some of the soil. So it's just working in tandem with animals and nature. And you can always tell because you start to get the butterflies come back, the bees come back. Mm-hmm. You know, for years, as fireflies were an issue. We didn't have many fireflies around home. Well, you get all those chemicals you're spraying, you start to kill bugs you didn't know had a purpose.
Yep.
So anyway, regenerative agriculture is just working in tandem with nature, but you know, our animals are grass-fed and grass-finished. We use the hogs to root up kind of the forest and the undergrowth to clear a patch. Goats are good at that too. Anyway, so that's kind of the background of what Moink does. It's not organic is such a it's a well-known term, but it didn't tell you the whole story. Because you can have an organic chicken that was raised by Tyson in a confinement building that's given a square foot of space outside, given organic corn. And in my opinion, you end up with is an overpriced funky chicken. It's still funky chicken. And a funky chicken is best left to the dance floor, my friends.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. And pretty much what they've turned it into is just checking a box to get that label, marketing term, more than likely for the organic anymore. At least that's what it seems like.
Well, I'm not familiar with the inner workings of their brains and whoever their brains are. Yeah. But there is a great book called The Meat Racket that I highly suggest folks read. If you're readers, it kind of goes back into the old world of like, how did Tyson become Tyson? What is the background of it? Why chicken? Mm-hmm. What happened there? And it's a fascinating read of kind of digging into that chicken industry. But yeah, I mean, it's a meat mafia. It's a meat racket. Four companies control over 80% of the meat industry. So we're up against some pretty heavy hitters, you know, and I could get into some of like what that really means for the farm, but if you're not a farmer, some of what I say would sound like Greek, but, let's just say that, that the pertinent data is that less than 2% of Americans are farmers. Actually, of last data, it was like 1.3% of Americans are farmers. But 100% of us eat. By my calculations, I expect we have a math problem.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't know if you've looked into the, because I did a little bit of research on the waste that the U.S. does every year. And you know, in my opinion, if we are able to utilize our food a little bit better than we are now and cut that waste down, because we waste like 80 billion pounds of food each year. If we cut that down by, let's say, 20%, we could end up possibly having a better marketplace and being more capable of having the family farms take a little more share of the market. I mean, in my opinion, if we're able to be a little more thoughtful of what we do with our food.
Well, that's an interesting view of it. Yes, we waste 18% of our food in the United States. That's true. There's some logistical challenges getting from point A to point B. You know, there is, if a farmer, if I were to raise 1,500 acres of tomatoes, I've got to be able to sell them. Mm-hmm. I already told you there's only 600 people in the town I live in. That's a lot of tomatoes for 600 folks, you know?
Yes, ma'am.
So there is a logistical challenge with that. I prefer to look at things from a different viewpoint, Paul. I like to see the world through rose-colored glasses. Instead of what should I not do, what can I do? You know, what is the small start? What can I do with what I have where I'm at? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if that means you normally go to McDonald's 7 days a week, I don't know. I'm just saying hypothetical, not you specifically, yeah. Paul, but just somebody, right? What is one thing they could do with what they have, where they're at? And one of those might be a small step of at the grocery store, maybe taking a look of where their meat is coming from. You know, what is a label behind it? I still believe a organic chicken in terms of the greater implications of the ground and stuff, even though I think that label's hogwash, it's still better than just your ordinary funky chicken, right? That's a small step. Or let's see, what's some other small steps a person could take? If you're going to eat meat, make sure the animal was given a life worthy of its sacrifice. You know, maybe it's better to eat a little less meat, but when you do, it's a higher quality. You know, there's things like that that a person could maybe do, but you know, every purchase matters. You know, a lot of my customers, they get a box. I have quite a few of them that maybe get a box every 8 weeks instead of every other week, right? They just want it every few months. Why? Because they're doing what they can with what they got where they're at. It might be just a tad bit pricier. Although with inflation prices, I got to tell you, we're becoming more competitive on the daily because we don't play the market. You know, our reality, I wish you could see where I was at right now so you could see what I look at from my office. But our reality is not dictated by the winds of Washington or the price of pork bellies on the Chicago Board of Trade. You know, one of the things that Moink does with our farmers and our consumers is because we project out, because our animals eat grass, they're not dependent on the price of corn. Our prices are more stable. So like in the height of COVID, when stuff went bat poo crazy, you know, we were probably cheaper than grocery store. But yeah, anyway, side note, that's just in regards to inflation and the seasonality of meat. People don't realize they think of like, oh, apples in the fall and peas in the spring, but they don't understand that animals also have a seasonality to them.
Yeah, that is very true.
Yeah.
So with kind of talking about, since we were talking about the market and everything, so do you think it is possible, it may not be a quick fix or anything, but do you think it's possible that family farms and independents will be able to take control of the market again?
Well, right now you have some power concentrated into the hands of a few, what would be considered too big to fail. Mm-hmm. The consumer's memory is short, but mine is not.
Yeah.
And 2008, we had lots of companies that were too big to fail.
Yeah.
You know, so that's always something that happens there. Can't happen. Probably eventually does happen, I think, in the cycle of economics. During the height of COVID last year, the family farm took center stage because some of these large conglomerates, Smithfield being one of them, they produce 60% of the U.S. pork wholly owned by the Chinese. They shut down a lot of their kill facilities, a lot of their confinement buildings. They culled, i.e. Just stopped production on a lot of hogs because the money didn't make sense for them. They were losing money, right?
Yeah.
So small family farms really rose to the challenge. And we fed this country during COVID, even though we never got any credit for it, you know, but that's what we do. Mm-hmm. Can the small family farm? Of course they can. Will they? You know, I'm a tenderhearted capitalist. I believe that money talks. And what I mean by that is when it becomes economically viable for the small family farm to compete, they will. Mm-hmm. But do I naturally think that we're all going to have some sort of humanitarian wake up tomorrow? It's the right thing to do. I'm sorry, but that's one place where my rose colored glasses come off. I think you have to make it easy for folks. You know, mm-hmm. I think you have to put yourself in the way of things happening so they can happen. I do not believe that. Unless there's some changes in regards to policies. And what I mean by that is not more policies, but less. And I'm not debating one side of the political spectrum or not. But I believe that if you put the small family farm against a corporate conglomerate and you take the gloves off, i.e. you put us on a level playing field, right?
Yeah.
The person that comes out the top, or rather the small family farm versus corporate America, which one will win? I believe it's the one that works the hardest. And people that farm because they love it Well, we are never outworked.
No. That's your livelihood. That's your life. That's what you guys do. And yeah, that's major respect for everything that you and all the other farmers around the country do. And, you know, we definitely want to make sure that we do our part as consumers, and our listeners here do their part to help you guys along and try to make it a little bit easier and better.
The thing is, it's a national pastime, I believe, at this point, to feel bad for the poor, sad farmers. Aren't we just a bunch of poor little somebody that needs sympathy? Well, the fact of the matter is, Paul, look at that a different way. It's in your best interest.
Yeah.
For multiple reasons, this here, one of them. I'll just give you one of many, right? In hog production and the commercial world, so back to the Smithfield farms and these confinement buildings, they give the hog something called ractopamine. Ractopamine is banned in 189 countries, including China. But it's in 60% of America's pork supply. Why? Oh, well, they figured out they can get them grow a little quicker, a little faster, make a little more money.
Wow.
I would never have that chemical on my farm. It could kill my children. Yeah. So I want to ask you, who would you like looking out for your children's food security? Me or Smithfield, wholly owned by the Chinese? Which one of us do you want in your corner, Paul? I'm just asking. Exactly.
For me, that's a no-brainer. That would be you.
So there you go, right? Because that's just the way of way things go. But anyway, it's not so much of like farmers, consumers need to feel bad. Again, I'm going back to the how do you look at things? Not what you shouldn't do, but what you could do. And so it's not so much, you know, try to support the small family farm because we need your help, which of course we do. Mm-hmm. It's support the small family farm because it's in your best interest that we survive. Exactly. You know, it's your food security. It is the quality of your supper table. It is, did you know that the decline of rural America is directly correlated to the decline of the family farm? The decrease in wages of the family farm is directly correlated to the increase of drug use, poverty, opioid crisis. And if somebody listening to this doesn't know somebody who knows somebody that's been affected by the opioid crisis, you ain't living. Yep. And in rural America, you are more likely to die of an overdose. And why is that? Well, it's directly related to community infrastructure, poverty. There's a lot of things that go into it. But what am I saying to you? I'm saying that the food that you put on your supper table, statistically speaking, so this isn't like emotions and feelings, the data shows that the food you eat is directly correlated to the lives of folks affected by drugs. You can have an impactful difference, not just on the lives of farmers, but on as our community as a whole. And, you know, rural America is the fabric, the backbone of what America was built on. You know, at one point, over 90% of Americans were farmers. It was farmers that rose up and threw off the yoke of tyranny from the British. You know, it was farmers that banded together to say, we shall be free. So I understand that it's now this like cute little thing to say, oh, these poor farmers. But for me, who I'm an eighth generation farmer, it's a cultural identity, right? Yeah. It is not just a livelihood. It's a way of life. It is, it's fighting words almost, right? Like this is, you know, nobody woke up and said, I want to be poor, so I'm going to be a farmer.
Yeah,
that's not how that works. And, you know, and if you don't understand the struggle of the small family farm, let me give you another one. Farmers are more likely to commit suicide than veterans. Yeah, let that shocking one sink in. And as a child who lost my father to suicide, I'm going to tell you, there's a mental health crisis. And I'm sure you guys could understand it when I start to explain the fact that a farmer gets up, they work all year long. They fight the weather. They fight no sick days because the animal's going to have to be fed no matter what you feel. And then you don't know whether you're going to make or lose money till the end of the year. So tell me, if you went to your job every single day and you gave it 100% of what you got, right? and you didn't know if you were even going to get paid or lose money. You might lose money going to that job, but you ain't going to know till the time comes to cash out, which is at the end of the year, whenever you pull out your harvest, whenever you sell your hogs, because you have no control over that. Now you tell me how you would live your life, because that is what farmers deal with. That's the struggle. Yep. But again, it's our culture. So why do farmers farm? What's wrong with this? Like, we stupid or something? You know, like, why would you sign up for a losing proposition? Well, first of all, 90% of us have what's called an off-the-farm job. That means our full-time, off-the-farm job pays for our farming habits. So we go to work all day, and then in the afternoons when we're done, get up before the break of dawn, weekends, all that's when we take care of our farm life. That's number one. Number two, like I already told you, it's a cultural identity, right? So for us, there is something about the land, working on the land. There's something about our community. You know, we band together when another farmer is sick, take them meals. We will get together and put their crops in, take care of their animals. And we will line the truck, the highway, with combines and trucks when that hearse carries them to the final resting place. It is a sign of respect and community that we all band together in farm town. So that's a cultural thing, right? That's our identity. My children learn the value of work ethic. They understand that we take care of animals, that they learn empathy, the circle of life. They learn that our neighbors, we go help our neighbors and they come help us, that there is a reason that we all got to get along, because we need to know each other. We need to help each other, right? These are the cultural kind of identities that you can't throw into, I am a farmer, therefore it's my profession. I am a farmer, therefore this is my way of life.
Yeah, very, very cool. I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
So that's what you're really supporting when you support small family farms. You support my ability to spend quality time with my children on the farm. You support our way of life, a cultural, a small town, and more specifically, you support, you know, 22 good paying jobs and an opportunity to rise above poverty. You know, these are real impactful things. And the small family farms got that trickle down effect, right?
Yeah.
You support a small family farm, they buy from the local hardware store that supports their local community, and on it goes. But now that you've seen all that, you can see what I'm clearly passionate about. But let me talk about the other side, which is what people really care about. And I ain't judging nobody for being selfish, but the proof is in the taste, right? Doing the right thing never tasted so good. I mean, it just, you can taste the difference. And so if for no other reason, if you actually don't, you have no heart, you don't care about farmers, you don't care about food security, and you don't really care about anything else, I'll tell you what, I'm going to get you on how it tastes. How about that?
That sounds great. But yeah, I mean, when we purchase from you, or, you know, farms, family farms, like local farms in general, we're, as you're saying, we're helping build a community, provide jobs to individuals that work on the farms. And we're also looking after our health and well-being, and helping keep the generational opportunity alive within those communities, and to keep the small farms alive, which is in everyone's best interest. So no, I think that's a great way to look at it. And, you know, thank you for sharing that. So I know we said 45 minutes, we're coming up on close to that, but I did have a couple other questions I wanted to ask real quick before we finish up the conversation. But going into, you know, we were talking about, you know, the big corporate farms in Smithfield, but do you think the allergies and health issues in the U.S. are caused due to this food we consume from the corporate entities?
I don't believe I'm qualified to answer that question. I'm not a doctor.
Okay.
But I will tell you this. I will tell you, my daughter is a celiac, which is, she's allergic to gluten. It's rare to be a true celiac. Lots of people have gluten sensitivities, but to be a true celiac is kind of more rare than people realize. I can tell you that when she goes to somebody's house, or she's gone out to eat, she often has a reaction to beef. She doesn't have reaction dollars. Take that for what it's worth. I'm not a doctor. I don't know the rest of it. I just know my baby girl does better when she eats grass-fed, grass-finished beef from Moink. So there, that's what I got to say about that.
Well, to me, that's proof right there. So, but anyway, so as far as providing support for Moink, how can we find you, support you, and help support the community of farmers that you work with?
Yeah, so if you want to purchase directly from Moink, you can do that at moinkbox.com, right? Or I'm sure you could Google stock me, Lucinda Cramsey, Shark Tank, all those things will get you there. The other thing is just kind of paying attention. I always say, look, if you have to make a choice between purchasing from Moink, but you have a local farmer that does grass-fed, grass-finished, regenerative agriculture, by all means, go with the local one. You know, like Moink's here. We have a high-quality product, but at the end of the day, our objective is to fix a broken food system. So there's a couple of different ways you can do that. Then, if you could, just take a minute to learn and kind of Google what are those four companies. Maybe read that book I was talking about. Sometimes awareness and understanding of what's really happening just allows your mind to think, and that could possibly be step one. You know, if you say, I'm fixing to go to McDonald's every day for the rest of my life, all right, baby, you go on with your bad self. But go ahead. Maybe you ought to know what you're doing. Just take a look. And it's just fascinating of, you know, how we got here. And I don't think there's any one quick fix. Paul, if I knew a quick fix, I'd be doing it. But I think it's progress is sometimes slow, but that's all right. One step forward is still one step forward.
Exactly. And sometimes it's about baby steps and making sure the things go correctly and productively throughout that step. And then you get to where you want to be, even if it's slower than we want it to be.
Okay. And then here's the last thing I'll give your listeners as a helpful tip. If you find yourself ever at a sketchy buffet and or you're in someplace you wonder about food safety, and you have to choose between the beef, the pork, the chicken, or the salmon. Eat the pork. It's less likely to kill you.
Gotcha. That's a good tip.
It carries less pathogens. Anyway, the lowly pork chop always gets a bad rap, but it is least likely to kill you on a buffet.
That's interesting. That's good tip. So thank you for that.
Very well. All right, Paul, well, I appreciate you very much, and thank you for taking the time. And to your listeners, I appreciate y'all letting me go on and talk about what I'm so passionate about.
Yeah, well, Lucinda, again, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate having you with us, and thank you for taking the time to talk with me today and, you know, share about Moink and your experiences, and, you know, the passion that you have is contagious and it's amazing. So, you know, thank you again, and I wish you the best of luck. And if there's anything I can do for you, by all means, let me know.
All right, Paul, appreciate you. You have a good day now.
All right, you too now. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, well, there we go. That was my conversation with Lucinda Cramsey from Moink. You know, what a great conversation. And we covered a lot of information during the time that we had together. And, you know, I really appreciated talking with Lucinda, hearing about her viewpoints and how she goes about things and how she runs her business. And, you know, a lot of great information that she provided to us. And, you know, there's a few things that she had mentioned that I'm going to take away and instill into my life and the way that I look at things as well. And, you know, the one thing that I really like that she said is don't focus on what I should not do, but focus on what I can do. And, you know, if we all kind of take that mindset and focus on what we can do and what's within our power to make things a little bit better, I think things will kind of start to turn around and shift, especially within our lives and with our health and family lives and, you know, in our communities as well. But that's a great way of looking at it. But again, I hope you guys enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. Make sure you check out Moink, which is www.moinkbox.com, and see what they have to offer. They've got a lot of great options there, and I'm sure you can find something that will work for you and your family. Well, thank you very much for listening, guys. And if you enjoyed this episode, that you leave us a 5-star rating. And we'd love to hear your reviews and like to hear what you're thinking out there. So make sure you leave us a review as well. And, you know, check us out on the socials, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. and love to see some activity on that and hear some comments through those as well. So, and if you could, if you haven't done so already, make sure you check out the website, www.sizzlinarrow.com. And we got some new stuff coming down the pipes for that, some new blogs and a few new reviews. So keep on the lookout for that as well. But again, as always, I appreciate y'all. Thank you for tuning in. And we will be back here with another Just for Thought episode at the end of this week. And yeah, we'll talk to y'all then. So in the meantime, get in the kitchen, get outdoors, and just simply make things happen, guys. All right, y'all have a good one and talk to you soon.